At 6:45 p.m. on Saturday, July 20th, my wife and I were in our family room watching TV when we heard a crash outside. And we rushed outside to find one of our largest trees had fallen. Now, to add insult to injury, not only did it fall, and we ended up having to cut the whole tree down, and there were a number of trunks from it that provided lots of shade and lots of homes for the squirrels and the birds and stuff like that. But we also had to just had to cut it down, and so it took our power line out, so we had no power. We had no AC, we had no power to our refrigerator and our freezer, and we had no power for lights. Even though we still had plenty of light, because then the pictures were taken at 7:30, this was in July, so at 7:30 it was still well lit outside, but it was going to get dark very quickly. Thankfully, the power company was out there by 8:30 and had crews in sight and on place working. And you see how much of the trees already cut down and taken out of the way? And then by 10:30, they were done, and there was light. 4 hours from the time the tree fell, less than 4 hours from the time the tree fell till the time that they were pulling away and our power was restored. Now, just so you know, you need to know this. When there is a power outage, losing your air conditioning, especially in the summer, can be an issue, but it's not that big of an issue. Losing power to your refrigerator and to your freezer might be an issue because you might lose some items in the freezer. But none of that compares to losing light. There is just something about being in the dark that is unsettling, even with candles and flashlights and lanterns and things like that. Not having powered lights in the house after dark is just not comfortable. It's not something that people enjoy. Well, even in a more powerful way, living in spiritual darkness is absolutely devastating. And that's why so many people are jumping on the woke bandwagon that we talked about last Sunday night, because they simply cannot, no one really can, accept that life is meaningless. And so they have to find meaning somehow. People have to find meaning in something. And so even if they don't believe in eternal meaning, they're finding meaning in trying to correct the perceived mistakes of this world that they live in. And they have been taught, as we noted last week, and we'll talk about it a little bit more this evening, that America is guilty of systemic racism. And I'll explain what that means in just a moment. It's systemic racism and bigotry, and they hope to replace it with what they call justice and equity. But as we pointed out last Sunday night, equity is basically taking everything away from everybody else and giving it out to people who didn't have it. That's not equality. We would believe in equality as Americans, but we would not believe in equity. We should not believe in it, but that's what their goal is. And it's a way of absolving themselves of their sense of guilt for the things that they have, and finding some sense of real ultimate purpose. Unfortunately, in pursuing that, they've fallen down the rabbit hole that we talked about this morning in Alice in Wonderland. That's a rabbit hole of insanity and irrationality, and they know it. And that just makes them angrier than ever, because they have no real hope or purpose in life, even though they're trying to seize some sense of it by welcoming this mindset and this thinking into their hearts. Last week we talked about this and why the church is a beacon, part one, and we spent some time examining the spirit of anger, bitterness, and envy that permeated the heart, or that penetrated the heart of Cain in Genesis chapter 4. And it's that same spirit of anger, resentment, and bitterness that permeates or has penetrated the hearts of the woke mob that we talked about last week. And woke is just the idea of being awakened to what they see as this pervasive problem in our culture. It is a spirit of anger and bitter resentment that believes, and I want you to listen to what I'm saying carefully, and I'm going to show you something in a moment that explains where I get this. It is a spirit of anger and bitter resentment that believes that white, heterosexual, able-bodied Christian men created a country and governing system designed specifically to oppress women and people of color. That's their thinking. That's their mindset. That's why I said it's irrational. And that's what I mean when I talk about systemic racism and bigotry. That the system that has been created, the American system, a government governing system of elected officials and laws that are applied across the board to people of all types and backgrounds, was never designed to be equally applied. And so that's what they believe. And I want to show you that this is called a wheel of power and privilege. This is something they study and they believe. And what they do is they divide people up into things like skin color, education, ability, sexuality, neurodiversity, which I don't know what that means, mental health, body size, housing, wealth, language, gender, and citizenship. So they divide every person in America into these categories, and you fit into one of those categories. And not only do that, but then they go into what they call the center of power and privilege, the system where people that are set in place to have power and privilege. And then on the outside, you have the marginalized or the oppressed people. And the goal of the woke philosophy, the woke mindset, is they've got to get all of these people of power and privilege out, yank them out of there, and get all of these marginalized groups into the position of power and privilege to make things right so that there can be justice, true justice, and true equity. That's the philosophy. That's the mindset. And so, just to show you that I wasn't making it up when I said white, male, etc., notice who is in the position of power. White, skin color, able-bodied, can't be disabled in any way, heterosexual, so they have to have a normal heterosexual inclinations or beliefs, lifestyle. And there's some other things here. Own property, they're rich, they speak English, and cisgender man. And they talk about sexuality and gender as two different things. You may be, your gender may not be how you see how your approach to life sexually is. Gender is this idea that cisgender man is the person in this position of power and privilege. Cisgender just means somebody that knows that they're a man or that they're a woman and is happy with that and happy to identify themselves as the gender that they were born with, as opposed to what's going on in culture today where they're trying to say you can be whatever gender you want and I was born a male but my true gender internally is female. That's irrational nonsense, but that's what they believe. And so they've got to get all of these cisgender white males that are in all of these other, have all these other things out so that the people who don't have those things are brought into power. Now, rather than, so that's their approach. And they want to destroy the whole system because they think the system is built to keep these people in power and keep these people out of power. What they should be doing is addressing the very real problem of people who use the system to abuse others. And to do that, identify the bad individuals and use the system that is designed to protect the innocent and punish the malevolent people, no matter who they are, no matter what their race or gender might be. And they want to replace that system with one that is admittedly racist and bigoted because they identify you by skin color. You're either white or you're non-white. If you're non-white, then you're a marginalized person. It doesn't matter how much power or wealth you may have, you're still a marginalized person just on the basis of skin color. That's their mindset. That's their thinking. That's their mantra, their whole outlook on life. And so what they want to do is they want to replace the system that is designed to not care about those things with one that puts that as their priority. It condemns people based, this doctrine of woke mentality condemns people based on their skin color, their gender, their ability, and sexual identity. That's why you see this anger, bitterness, because it's not rational and they know it, and so they've just gone crazy. And a classic case of projection. Do you know what projection means? Raise your hand if you know what projection means. I got a few hands up. Projection means the idea of if I have a problem with anger at somebody or hatred in my heart, then I think that everybody else, all of you out here, you have that same kind of hatred in your heart, and so I'm going to condemn you for the hatred that I have, because that's the only way I can deal with my hatred. So you're guilty of what I'm guilty of. And you need to be punished for it, instead of me punishing myself or changing who I am. They're guilty of doing the very thing they accuse this nation of doing, being racist, sexist, bigoted. That's what they are by the very definition and by what they proclaim publicly. And if they are successful, they will destroy the very thing holding them back from setting off a bomb that will destroy themselves and everything they love. And that's what's so sad about it, is that they don't realize they're destroying themselves and everything that protects them and will keep them safe from their own stupidity. Now, in fairness, we must admit that people are flawed, sinful creatures, including ourselves, who have done and are capable of doing evil things. We cannot deny that. Racism has existed. It was, for a while, institutionalized in segregation laws. That was part of the system, and that has been replaced and overthrown, and because the system was designed to overcome those bugs. And even godly people can say and do racist things. I grew up in a racist country, a racist neighborhood, a racist town, a racist state. The N-word was constantly used in my house. It came off my lips because that's the way I was raised. Until I was about 19 or 20 years old and decided I was going to be a faithful Christian, I couldn't talk like that or think like that anymore. But in the 90s, late 90s, when my kids were around 10, 11 years old, I had to threaten my father-in-law to cut him off from access to his grandchildren if he didn't stop using the N-word in our house. He'd come to the house and he'd start talking about in this, in that, and I'd tell him, Earl, stop! Don't talk like that around my kids. And I finally ended up saying, if you don't stop talking like that around my kids, I will not let you be around my kids, ever. That's not acceptable. Then he tries to defend, well, I'm not racist. You're talking like one, even if you don't think you are one. Don't talk like that. Don't divide the world into them, people of color, and us, white people. I explained to him what you're doing is you're saying that when a white person is bad, then that's the exception. Because normally white people are good. And when a black person is good, that's the exception. No, it's not. People are people. And so we need to stop judging people on the basis of color. You got the message. You stop doing it. So let's not be foolish and deny that racism still exists. It does. It's out there. We know it is. So we can't deny that. And it's in people's hearts. But we must know also that the system itself isn't racist. People are. And fortunately, thank God, people can change. Hearts can change. That's why we preach the gospel, so that people's hearts and their lives will change. And so that brings us to the main point tonight of why the church is a beacon, part 2, from Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. Let's read verses 14 through 16 to get the thoughts in our mind as we begin our study here of the text. In verse 14, he says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." The reason the church is a beacon is so that it will impact the world through people who have changed what they are on the inside, So that our outside, our words, and our deeds reflect Jesus out into the world. And that's what we want to look at tonight, is some practical attitudes and actions that show why the church is a beacon. And they're all going to revolve around the idea of shine. Shine, because it's what we do. That's what Christians should do. Let's go back to Matthew 5, verse 14. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all the house, all that are in the house. So a city or a lamp will shine. That's what it's designed to do. So Christians are designed to shine. Now, what this does is this rules out any monastery or convent lifestyles. Now, Christians must not hide themselves away from the world in isolated enclaves and compounds and a futile effort to avoid being contaminated by the world around them. And I think sometimes brethren want to do that. Just, you know, we just get away from the world and hide from it. And it won't be, their sin won't be a problem. Let me tell you something. Sin will be a problem because, all right, let me make this first. Because I'm there. If I'm there with you, there's going to be a problem with sin because I still sin. And if you're there, there's going to be a problem with sin because you still sin. So you can't get away from sin by hiding from the world. We are to mix and mingle with the world, no matter how much it hates and despises us. That's what we have to do. In order to shine, we have to be that city set on a hill. We have to be out so the world can see us. If we're hiding away from the world, they're not going to see our light, and we're not going to be serving Christ properly. And we must not retreat or hide in our homes and protected communities, hoping the government will come along and make these odd weirdos shut up and go away so that I won't be bothered by them. Not the way it works. We can't shine if we use the power of the government to make people go away that we don't like, behave in ways that we don't like. So that's the first thing. Shine. It's what we do. Okay? The next thing is shine indiscriminately. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's go back to verse 15. What's in the last part of verse 15? It says, this light that you don't put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. So the light doesn't care who sees it. It's not saying, okay, these people over here are acceptable, so I'll shine my light to them, but oh, not those people over there. I don't want them to see the light of Christ. No, we want everybody to see the. And in fact, if we're thinking in terms of these people versus those people, those are the ones we need to go seeing, go and be around so they can see the light shine out of us. I like Donnie's prayer this morning. We'll be around people that not make us a little uncomfortable. That are people that are struggling. I think you said with drugs and things like that. Those are the people we need to be trying to reach with the gospel. Everybody, but instead of being, don't want to get around those people, we need to be willing to be exposed to them in order to help them. We don't play favorites. By overlooking some sin and sinners, those are the approved sins and approved sinners, while condemning other sins and sinners because we just don't like those. That's selective outrage. Selective outrage is, this bothers me, but that doesn't, so I'm going to be outraged about this, but not about that. When both are sins and equally wrong in the sight of God. Let me illustrate it this way, and I hope I don't step on any toes. Brother Dennis, you've got a good article about this. I'm going to talk about it. Maybe you'll talk about it next week. I don't know. But his article will. But he takes a little different approach than me. I'm a little more blunt. All right. A little more rough than you are. If you were offended, and you should have been, if you were offended by the mocking of the Lord's Supper in the Olympic opening ceremonies last month, then if that offended you, but you didn't blink an eye or bat an eye at the nearly naked athletes, you might be guilty. We might be guilty of selective outrage. I don't watch much Olympics except on YouTube because I can't stand watching commercials. So anyway, and listen to people blather on and on about stuff they don't know about. So, but I watched some of it, and I saw some of the track athletes, and I was like, whoa, these people don't have any clothes on. And I watched a little bit of the gymnastics. I'm like, these people are not dressed. We need to be equally offended. People are naked, nearly naked. They're nearly naked. Whether they're pretending to be weirdos like in that opening ceremony event or normal athletes on a field or in a gym. We need to look at these things the same way. All right, so I may have stepped on some toes there. I know I stepped on mine because I still watched them. If we have some gay neighbors, a gay couple, a couple of guys move in down the street from us, and we get upset about that, and we talk to the neighbor who's married to his or her third spouse or living with somebody that he or she's not even married to, and complain about how bad that is to somebody who's living in sin, we might be guilty of selective outrage. Let me give you another illustration. My wife and I like watching cop shows, mostly British stuff. I'm talking about with Rhonda and Steve the other day. But there's an American show that we watch, and it's been over for a while, so we're just watching reruns. And an episode came up last week, just this week, and I was thinking about this lesson while I was watching this show because it was about the transgender guys who were drag queens. And the whole show was designed to show all of these bigoted white guys and make everybody feel sympathy for these guys, drag queens. And that aggravated me. And then I got to thinking, you know what? There are two cops on this show that are not married who are sleeping with each other. I don't get nearly as offended by that. I'm guilty of selective outrage. We need to be very careful about that. Be equally offended by all sin, whether gay or straight, trans or cis. And cis is just a word that means normal. But if you use the word normal, then that makes the trans people look abnormal, and they don't want to be considered abnormal, so they use the word cis in its place. That's why that has become a thing in the world. So, whether it's normal sin or abnormal sin, it needs to offend us. It needs to bother us. We need to be aggravated or disappointed in it. All right, well, let's go to the next one. Shine with intentionality. Go back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 16. Matthew 5, verse 16 says, "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." So what he's doing, he's saying, shine in a way that people will see you. Live in a way so that people will see your good works and glorify God. So we should be living in a way that people will see it. We want people to see us. We want people to recognize that we are godly people, that we are serving Christ, that we are, our light is shining in the world. We want that to be seen. Otherwise, we won't be a light on the hill. We'll be a light under a basket. We want to be out there so the world can see us. But it's important to notice that they see your good works and glorify God. We do not act to be seen of men so they will glorify us, but that they will glorify God. We don't brag about what we did, like we did, but what God did to and through us. Now, some people read this and say, wait a minute, doesn't this conflict with what he said in Matthew 6 and verse 1? In Matthew 6, verse 1? No. Let's go to verse 6, chapter 6, verse 1. He says, beware of practicing your righteousness before men. Well, okay, there he is. Don't do it to be seen. No, read the rest of the verse. To be noticed of them by them, otherwise you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So the guy point here in chapter 6, verse 1 is, don't do it so they'll be proud of you and brag about you and think you're all that great. Do it so that they will think that God is great and God is magnificent. So shine with intentionality. Well, the next one is shine sharply. And this one we need to think about this one a little bit. And this goes to Ephesians chapter 6. In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul's talking about the armor of the Christian. Then in verse 17, he says part of this armor is to take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. So what we are supposed to do is use God's Word to cut through the lies and irrationality that is consuming our culture. That means we have to be willing to stand up against it. And when someone says something that is not true, if in a situation where it's appropriate, say, not true. If somebody's trying to tell you, okay, you have to address this person as she when he is a he. We have to be, folks, we just have to say, you know what, I know the law may say that I'm supposed to do this, but God's law says I've got to be truthful. I'm not going to accept somebody's lie just for momentary convenience, because it will be uncomfortable. I may get in trouble at work. I may get in trouble in my community because I refuse to accept that the mindset and accept a lie is true and say that a lie is true. That's the part of it that we really must be careful about. We must not allow ourselves to get into a position where we, for convenience sake, will say a lie to make sure that we don't get in trouble or have difficulties. It may be easier to just agree with the world's irrationality about racism, gender identity, privilege, etc. But we serve a higher God than this world. That means don't go along to get along. This is going to create difficulty, folks. This is going to create moments of problems. We have to be willing to say, I've served God. I'm not going to state a lie just because the state or the government or culture or society tell me I have to make them happy. Nope, we can't do that. Because here's the thing, and this is where we really have to understand, is that when we surrender truth for a lie, we've abandoned God. And we're stuck in that lie. We're stuck in that lie. We're trapped by those lies. And the only way out is to just confess to God that we've messed up and we tried to make convenience more important than Him and come out and say, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. And that's even harder than just refusing to go along with it in the first place. Once you accept a lie, knowing it's a lie, and speak and repeat and support the lie, we've become liars. And there's a place for liars. It's called the lake of fire. And we don't want to go there. When does someone go there? God comes first. Now, don't take that to mean, ooh, James is saying I can be rude and nasty and use the sword of spirit to just fillet people alive and slice them up and be cruel. No. No. Let me repeat that in case you didn't hear it the first two times. No. Be gentle. Shine gently. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15, we're told to speak the truth in love. We are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ. So Christ spoke the truth in love, and so just like Him, that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be kind and gentle and respectful of other people's. Respectful doesn't mean we accept their lie and join in their lie, but it means that we're gentle when we confront or disagree or say that we cannot accept their lie. Be kind. Shine kindly. Now, shine kindly while telling the truth. Next thing is, shine Jesus. We're trying to save souls rather than trying to fix the world through political power. I want you to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul is writing to the church in Corinth telling them, you guys have a problem. You have a sinner that's among the church that is accepted within the church who's living in open sin, living in sin that is so gross that even the Gentiles know that it's disgusting and won't accept it and don't promote it. But you're sitting there saying, oh, you know what? God's grace is great, and so we're just going to love this person even though they're involved in sin. He was living with his father's wife, presumably a stepmother, not his own mother, but the Gentiles saw that this was evil. And they were proud of themselves for their tolerance and acceptance of the lie, that it was okay with God, that God's grace overlooked that. And he tells them in no uncertain terms throughout the chapter 5, kick him out, kick him out, kick him out, get rid of him, kick him out. Fortunately, as we see in 2 Corinthians, he repented and came back to the Lord as a result of being kicked out. But in verses 9 through 12, there's an interesting comment here is that they began to think, well, you know, he's telling us, all right, don't have anything to do with sinners. That means sinners of the world, and we need to condemn sinners of the world. No, he's not saying that. Verse 9, I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world. So that's that get out there and mix and mingle with the immoral people of this world. Or with the covetous and swindlers or with idolaters, for then you would have to go out of the world. That's not our job. But actually, I wrote to you not to associate with any so-called brother if he is an immoral person or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or a swindler, not even to eat with such a one. So you got somebody who's living in open sin that claims to be a Christian and wants to be a member of the church, we have to say no. Can't have that. Either stop or you're not welcome. Not going to kick you out of the building, but we're not going to let you participate in services as if you're a faithful Christian. But notice what he also says in verse 12. We don't take the step of using our power against outsiders. Verse 12, for what have I to do with judging outsiders? Do you not judge those who are within the church? But those who are outside, God judges. And then one more time, in case they didn't get the message, remove the wicked man from among yourselves. So it's not our job to use political power against sinners of the world, to try to make people use force to make people act like they're Christians when they're not. Our job as Christians is to try to persuade Christians to act like Christians and persuade people that aren't Christians to become Christians. Then in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verses 1 through 5, Paul makes this statement. So apparently there was a problem there with them thinking that they needed to be involved in politics to make people become Christians or act like Christians through political process. In chapter 10 of 2 Corinthians, he says this in verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. Here's what we're destroying. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. So we use the truth to persuade people to take captive their minds, capture their minds for Christ. We don't use political force. We don't use power. We don't use a sword or a club or the gun or a tank or a fighter jet to make people act like Christians. It's not our job. That's not the church's job. Now, it's okay to talk about political issues. In fact, part of shining sharply is talk about things that are political. We have to be bold enough to do that. But we need to make sure that we retain enough independence that when our preferred politician does something stupid or sinful, not to try to defend it. Say, look, I got nothing to do with that. I'm not defending that. That's wrong. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle that person might be on. But do not put your trust and faith in politicians or political parties from a spiritual standpoint. Just don't do it. Isaiah chapter 36 and verse 6. Turn back there, and I want you to look at this passage because one of the problems going on in the days of Isaiah under Ahaz, Ahaz was the king, and Isaiah was the prophet that God sent to try to return Israel to God. Actually, this is during the days of Hezekiah. And there was an effort, a desire to trust in Egypt to protect them from Assyria. In verse 6, He says, you rely on the staff of this crushed reed, even on Egypt, on which if a man leans, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all who rely on him. When we put our trust in politicians and political parties to solve questions and issues of faith, and to force people to behave and pretend to be Christians, we're trusting bruised reeds that will come back to hurt us. In fact, that's what you want to know what's going on in our culture right now? Is the people who were the victims of people using government to impose restrictions on them and harm them have seized power and are trying to seize power so they can turn it back on us. That's what happens when you seek political power. Well, the last one is shine even while suffering. Go back to the New Testament, 1 Peter chapter 3. A couple of passages here, but we'll just read 1 Peter chapter 3. And this is kind of a theme throughout the first epistle of Peter. And that is a sign even while suffering. We follow the example of Christ. We don't make other people suffer. We allow ourselves to suffer so that God is glorified. 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning of verse 8. To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. Verse 10, for the one who desires life, to love and see good days, must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? All right, so you shouldn't be persecuted if you're doing what's right. Verse 14, but even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation, and do not be troubled, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts. So if we suffer because we shine, that's okay. We're blessed. We're blessed. In chapter 4, verses 12 through 19, continues that thought, but we're about out of time. So let's go ahead and get our songbooks out, and we're going to sing a song of invitation. And as we do so, we're going to think, I just want you to think about this idea of shining. Shine should be ingrained in your heart as what you do. Because you're a follower of Jesus, and you don't care who sees it. You want everybody to see it. You want God to be glorified, and you're going to be truthful, and you're going to be gentle, and you're going to show Jesus instead of the political forces of the world, and you're going to shine even when you're suffering. That's what Christians do. And I think it's what you do. But as we get ready to sing the song of invitation, we do have to ask the question, will you shine? If you're not a Christian, you don't shine. And you need to shine, and we can help you shine. We can make you right with God, whether it's for the first time by repenting of your sins, confessing the name of Christ, and being baptized in water because you believe that Jesus is the Son of God. We can do that for you tonight. Or if you've hidden your light because it was more convenient than being truthful, more convenient and less problematic than accepting the world's lies and repeating them. If you've done that, you need to come out of that. But that's something you need to crave. Maybe not publicly, but it's certainly within your own heart. If we can help you in any way be right with God, please come while we stand and while we sing.